welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome. Welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program. It is Saturday evening, February 26th, and it is great to be back with you tonight as we broadcast to you live once again from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, broadcasting to the greater metropolitan Memphis area and surrounding counties in the tri-state region. Also, of course, syndicated on the Liberty News Radio Network to their AM/FM affiliate stations and simulcasting as well on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. It was refreshing to be able to enjoy a short vacation last week and have the show be, as I wrote on our website, more than capably hosted by Bill Rowland and Keith Alexander last Saturday. I had the opportunity, Keith, to catch up on last week's show in the broadcast archives. Of course, our broadcast archives are available to listeners on demand 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, should they miss a live episode. And that is, of course, brought courtesy to you by the Liberty News Radio Network. Little secret behind the scenes, I never listen, very rarely, I should say, do I listen to any of our shows in the archives unless it's one that I miss. I guess, you know, that's just one of the traits of our people. We just kind of cringe at the sound of our own voice, despite having accumulated a little celebrity and over the years. And I just don't do it. You know, even when I went to CNN, all those appearances on CNN, I came back from New York after one of those appearances, and some of my friends had taped it on DVR, and they wanted to watch it with me, and I made them watch it with the sound off. It's just one of those things. But listen, I enjoyed listening to last week's show. Our featured guest was the popular Reform Jewish. Now he's a Jewish convert, born Jewish. Now he is a Orthodox Christian, a monk, I think, Brother Nathaniel Kapner, always sensational. And Bill Rowland held court fantastically last week during the third hour. He discussed the disturbing trends at the CPAC and several other hot issues. I tell you, Keith, hearing the show go so well last week may prompt me to take more vacations. You and Bill, man, y'all had it rolling.
We don't need you to take any more vacations, James. We felt like Brand X, that's for sure. But it's always good to get together with Bill. Bill stays busy, of course, with his Council of Conservative Citizen gig and isn't on as much as we'd like him to be, but he's doing great when he is there. You know, Brother Kapner is always, you know, special. I mean, he just sparkles. That guy's, you know, one thing you got to say about Jewish people, they are smart. And when you get one that has been properly converted to conservatism like Brother Kapner, it's really a joy to have him on.
It always is. He is a favorite guest. When we did that poll last December about the guest that our listeners would most like to hear from in 2011, I think he was in the top three or four vote getters. And that is, you know, goes back the 7 years we've been on the air. And Brother Kapner just made his first appearance last year. So he's a fan favorite. And I think we're going to be having him back on in March, if I'm not mistaken. So he's going to be making back-to-back appearances nearly. But I want to thank y'all again. And of course, the crew in Utah at LNR and all of our listeners and everybody that administers our virtual fan party and online chat at cfcc.org. If you're not there yet, ladies and gentlemen, join us. It's going on right now at cfcc.org. The Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party and online chat. I just wanted to thank everybody one more time as we get kicked off this evening for making last week's show so great in my absence. And, you know, this show really never misses a beat. We have a great crew, great staff, and you talk about consistency and things you can bank on. You know, we talk often about the fact, and it's a fact that we're very proud of, we have stood the test of time for 7 years now. 7 years we've been broadcasting this show on the AM airwaves without fail. And you think back, we started this thing in 2004. Think of all the things. I just ask our listeners right now, listening around the world on the internet and in our affiliate cities, think back on your life in 2004. Fast forward to present day. How many things have changed in your life over that time span? The one thing that has remained steadfast is the fact that this radio program broadcasts to you on schedule without fail. Very rarely do we play a tape unless it, you know, it just happened. Christmas Day happens to fall on a night we're supposed to be on the air. We're always here for you. We stay lit. We continue to turn out a product. And despite all the ups and downs, mostly ups that we've gone through, we never surrender. And Keith, I think that's something that we're very proud of, and it's something that we want to have continue for another 7 years and onward. I mean, this is something that I think this program is a broadcast entity that means a lot to a lot of people, and we're happy to be able to deliver it to them.
Well, we never compromise. I think you're saying is no compromise, no retreat, no surrender, or something to that effect, and that describes what we do. Of course, it's a labor of love. Nobody's getting paid. We're trying to scratch out enough money and contributions so we can just pay the expenses of staying on the air. But we haven't backed off from our positions whatsoever because, you know, if you look at all these mainstream people, we had an article about Christine O'Donnell that was on the blog here recently that James did. And it shows you that despite all the groveling and all of the pulling of punches that she did, she was thrown under the bus by the usual leftist media gang, made to appear to be a total idiot and whatnot. So consequently, if you're going to be thrown under the bus anyway, at least you can have the integrity to and the pride to know that you haven't backed down. And that's what we do here at the political cesspool. The entire staff is totally committed to telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, James. And it's really a privilege to be on the show. I know I speak for all the other co-hosts that, you know, we're like family together. We get together virtually every week. We go on you know, outings together. It's because we enjoy one another's company, and if we didn't have that type of relationship, I don't think we could make this thing work.
No, I don't think we could either, Keith, and every now and then I guess we like to take a point of personal privilege and reflect here, and I felt led to do so, compelled to do so after taking a week off, recharge the batteries just a bit. The show went great. Going to have another great show tonight. You mentioned the blog and some of the articles we had posted there. I have been, if I do say so myself, burning up the internet since my return from my sojourn last week. A lot of great articles on the blog that have been posted at thepoliticalcesspool.org in the last, you know, 10 days. Well, every day, but I think particularly the last few weeks have had some just some great variety, some great content. We're not going to have a guest tonight. We're going to be catching up on some of those news items that have piled up since I've been out of town. And now that I've returned, we're going to start sorting through them, and we're going to get that kicked off right after our first commercial break of the evening. Want to welcome everyone back to the program this Saturday night. Sit down, buckle up, and hold on, because we are going to lead you straight into the murky waters of the political cesspool tonight. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, if you have not yet joined us, I see the seats are beginning to be filled here at the Political Cesspool Council of Conservative Citizens online chat and virtual fan party. Log on right now if you're listening to us on the internet. Just open up another page to your browser and visit cofcc.org. That is an organization that we have been in partnership with since the inception of this show, a long-lasting friendship. And that's another thing, Keith. We keep our friends and our enemies pretty consistent as well. You know, we work well with a lot of people, and the council is, of course, first among them. We'll be back right after this.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You just heard Grease by Frankie Valli. I don't want to get him put on the hate watch list, but I saw Frankie Valli last week. Big show tonight. As I said, we're excited about it. We're excited about every show. And I say this every show, but it's always sincere. And it is good to be back in the studio tonight. Good to be back here in the friendly confines of 1380 here in my pajamas with a nice glass of ice water there. And well, not really my pajamas because we are in downtown Memphis, but I got it's essentially pajamas. I got a nice little casual t-shirt on and some, some jogging pants. That's my war fatigues for political talk radio here, Keith.
Let me share something with you. I asked James today what size suit he wore, and I swear to you, he didn't know. I so we got to get you out of the black T-shirts, James, and get you in a suit occasionally. And he's said, well, I'll have to get fitted then because I have no idea what size I wear.
I've been fitted before. I just didn't commit it to memory. Unless I'm on TV, I don't wear suits. And that the TV thing doesn't happen every day. So I wear suits to go give speeches to, but that's only in about a dozen times a year. I don't wear suits enough to know, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Anyway, getting the show started tonight, we were talking about all the great articles that have been posted to our website in recent days. If you haven't checked out the one on Alabama State University, I saw a video on YouTube, and we just had to put it up on the Cesspool site because, you know, Alabama State, that's Keith's alma mater. And he says no, but I'm not going to give it away. I gotta give you an incentive to go visit. I'm not gonna tell you everything. What I'm just gonna tell you is you gotta watch this video that took place recently at Alabama State just to see what takes place at this particular Institute of Higher Learning. I gotta tell you, it was encouraging for me to see a majority black college producing such fine and aspiring young scholars, Keith. I was excited about that.
You know, our grandmothers used to tell us you can dress them up, but you can't take them to town. And if there is anything that shows that, the reality and the wisdom of that particular observation, it would be this Alabama State blog entry that James has come up with. I don't know where you find all this stuff.
Yeah, but we've gotten a little bit more avant-garde on the website, if you will. And I mean that in a good way. Typically, I spit on avant-garde when it comes to art. But we've got a little, maybe edgy is the word I'm looking for. Found some really good, provocative video content. And sometimes, you know, we talk about it here on the radio. It's good to be able to hear it. We certainly write about it on the website in between shows. But sometimes it's just good to see it, Keith. And these videos allow you to do that.
Another one of Grandma's favorite old sayings was that a picture is worth 1,000 words, and if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then a video is worth 1,000,000 words. All you have to do is watch this, and if you can watch the videos that we present on a normal, regular basis, weekly basis on the political cesspool and still maintain that there's such a thing as human equality or racial equality, then basically you've been mesmerized by the left. This, this is behavior that you would be hard-pressed to find, you know, in the white community. Let's just face it, or the Asian community, or just about any other community. This is, you know, and this is after 150 years after freedom, after the end of slavery, after 40 years of affirmative action, after all the changes, all the opportunities, all of the artificial boosting that could be done, here we are at a historically black college and university, and I mean, it looks like Monkey Island at the Memphis Zoo.
Well, and we don't say any of this stuff to be offensive, and I say that from the heart, ladies and gentlemen. We don't say anything on this program to be sensational or flamboyant. We don't want to be the Howard Stern of conservative talk radio, because at the end of the day, we are just that. We consider ourselves to be the genuine article of conservatism, or perhaps what you might have to call today paleoconservatism. And it is unfortunate that we have to point these things out, but I believe that the court of public opinion is big enough to still have room for genuine paleoconservative talk. And we don't say these things to offend anyone, but certainly there needs to be – the truth has to have an audience. Very well put, Keith. And we need some objectivity on the AM airwaves, and you're just not getting it, unfortunately, from Sean Hannity and the ilk like that, to say the least. You know, Keith, you're about to segue into a local story that has ramifications for listeners around the country and indeed around the world. This is a story that just happens to originate in Memphis, but I was flipping through an old newspaper today. Conservative talk radio gets a new lease on life in Memphis, and it was talking about, you know, basically – everything but conservative radio. It certainly wasn't talking about our program, which is, you know, honestly the only conservative talk show in this city now that's on the mainstream airwaves. It was talking about some other people, and Keith, I know you know who I'm talking about, and, you know, the 347th Rush Limbaugh wannabe and the poor man's Rush Limbaugh, it doesn't impress me, but, you know, that's what they're passing off. But you will never hear issues on those types of programs. And every city has the Rush Limbaugh wannabe or the Sean Hannity lackey. You're not going to hear on any of those shows the kind of grit that you're going to get here. And that's what separates us from the rest. That's what's given us credibility and name recognition, maybe notoriety if you don't approve of our work. But we are well-known. We make headlines, and we consistently make headlines, and it's because we offer a fresh perspective, and that's what you're going to continue to get.
If you listen to this particular new radio station in Memphis, it's called WMPS, and it's supposed to be all conservative talk all the time. Here is a key. Beware of a blue state conservative. They have one after another blue state conservative, kind of the junior varsity for, if the varsity is Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, people of that ilk, then this is the second team. This is Mike Gallagher, a guy named Urbanski, people like this. And they're really trying to sell people on the fact that Chris Christie, for example, this is Mike Gallagher's stick, is going to be the best choice for a Republican candidate for president. He is a social liberal, but a fiscal conservative. And let me tell you, if that's what is going to be served up by our betters, by our elites in charge of the Republican Party, the blue state Republicans, we need to pull a Murkowski on them. We need, the mainstream Republicans don't have any qualms whatsoever as the Murkowski incident in Alaska in the last election back in November showed, bucking the Republican Party and not voting for the official party nominee and instead voting for, elaborate write-in campaign, their person. Well, if they can do it, we can do them one better, and we need to do that. If they get another one of these warmed over blue state Republicans, and ask yourself, why do the blue states of America, which by definition never deliver their electoral votes to the Republican candidate, invariably get to choose the Republican nominee for president? And that's why, as they used to say, the more things change, the more they stay the same, James.
That's exactly what they say, Keith. And I'm looking at your notes here. It's good to have a freewheeling show. It sometimes we come here so stringently prepared that there's no room for flexibility. We're in a straitjacket. You've got a lot of good stories here. We only have a couple of minutes left in this segment. Is there one you can give us a little teaser on?
Yeah, let's talk about the school consolidation controversy that's occurring in Memphis now. You were gone last week. And we've had new developments that have really shown the hand of the left and what they intend to do. Here's what is happening. The Memphis City schools are vastly majority black, about 90%. The Shelby County schools, in other words, Shelby County outside of Memphis, Memphis is part of Shelby County, but Shelby County is a pretty large area. In the county schools, there's a separate school system. The Memphis City schools became what's called a special school district in 1869. Well, Memphis is trying to, or is, surrendering their charter. The default school system in Tennessee under Tennessee law is the county. So they're going to basically meld and be absorbed by the county system, which has 30% of the students, and they're a majority white school system, but they're not, they're very integrated. They're like 53% white and 47% non-white, of which 38% is black. We're setting the table now. We'll get back to you after this break.
Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We've got to get out of
this place. If it's the last. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Keith Alexander, before that last commercial break, was setting the table on a local issue pertaining to school consolidation. And we've touched on this in previous weeks, but it's coming to a head more and more each day. So, Keith, cut to the chase and give us the meat of the matter.
The meat of the matter is this. While you were away, it's become more and more apparent exactly what the master plan of the left here in the Memphis and Shelby County area is. They are supposedly surrendering their charter, so they will become part of the county school system. And as part of the county school system, you'd think that the presently constituted county school board is going to rule over and administer the new larger school system. But that's not what they have in mind, because they want those jobs and they want to control things. So they're going to press for a new election, claiming a violation of the famous old Warren era decision in the U.S. Supreme Court of Baker versus Carr, one man, one vote. We've got to have a vote and an election right away, and they have a majority on the county commission, which has said that if we don't have an election, they're going to appoint a new board, and of course that board will be top-heavy with black Memphians on it, the same people that are serving on the Memphis School Board now, the same people that have caused the Memphis school system to earn an F in all categories from the Tennessee Department of Education. Meanwhile, they're one of the bottom two in Tennessee, Humboldt and Memphis. On the other hand, in the top five includes Shelby County, which got all A's. But we're not going to go with that. We're going to allow the same people that ran the Memphis system into the ground to now try their hand at running Shelby County's new, improved, and bigger and better system into the ground as well. See, they're not going to allow themselves to be cordoned off from the money, that's one thing, nor are they going to be cordoned off from the power. And this is why white parents who live in suburban Shelby County, which was the first white flight area after the Memphis system went to heck in a handbasket, and this was done, again, primarily because of school racial integration, and in particular busing. That was kind of like the coup de grace following up the setup punch of Brown versus Board of Education. Well, what they're going to do and what they intend to do is take the thing over. And again, that's why white parents are absolutely frantic trying to figure out what they can do. They can do what they've done in the past, which is send their children to private schools, but then there are a lot of people that don't have the means to send their children to private schools nowadays, particularly when the going rate is about $15,000 per kid per year in the Memphis, at least the top line of Memphis private schools now. So, you know, why are we talking about this, James? This is, you know, just parochial interest, right? No, this is something that is very significant to the entire nation. It's coming to your community soon, particularly since the United States is scheduled to become a majority-minority nation. In other words, white people will no longer be the majority in America. It used to be 2050, now they've revised it upwards to 2042. When that happens, you're going to find that all of these areas of the country that haven't had a race problem before are going to have a race problem. Provo, Utah, we're talking about you. Dubuque, Iowa, we're talking about you. Because I have seen this inexorable pattern throughout my lifetime. Black people are caught on the horns of a dilemma. One, they hate honkies, but on the other hand, they seem to instinctively know that they have to live around a fairly large mass of white people in order to share in a first world environment, in a first world lifestyle. If they don't get to do that, things start trending towards Haiti and Detroit. So consequently, look at Memphis very closely. This is your future. It's like John Donne, the Elizabethan poet, said back in the 17th century, said, "Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for you." That's what is going to happen. And what is happening in Memphis is you're seeing, I think, probably the final nail in the coffin that's going to turn Memphis into the new Detroit, James.
Keith, you answered the question before I could ask it. How does this issue that pertains to Memphis specifically apply to our listeners who are at, who reside in other ports of call around the country? I think you pretty much summed it up.
It's kind of the end game of the civil rights movement, which was, again, one of the radical egalitarian movements that were launched against the old America by liberals. There are several others that we've talked to, things like, feminism, criminal rights, homosexual rights, no-fault divorce, all of those things have had the same purpose and basically the same result, which is to reduce white birth rates. Of course, illegal immigration or third world immigration is another aspect of the whole play. And what this is doing, it's causing white people to have fewer children. For example, school integration causes white parents that live in these areas that have large minority populations to realize they've got to send their children to private schools. Most people have limited financial resources, so what they do is they have smaller families. And there are a lot of people that live in, you know, the interior of America that don't have to cope with this. They live in areas like North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, places like this, where if they want to see a black person, they have to turn on the television set. Well, let me tell you, what's happening down here in Memphis is bound to happen to you sooner or later, with the demographic trends being what they are, unless something happens to stop the demographic trend and reverse it, James.
Keith, excellent commentary from you, as always, on a very sensitive but very important topic. While we're in Memphis, we might as well go ahead and stay here for a moment. Of course, one of Memphis's favorite sons, at least historically speaking, is Nathan Bedford Forrest. Nathan Bedford Forrest is very important to us here in the political cesspool, as well as Sons of the South. And as far as the history of the show goes, it's a well-known story now that our very first claim to fame, our very first burst of media attention came when we were the only organization or media entity, media outlet, that back in 2005 defended Nathan Bedford Forrest and his gravesite when Al Sharpton came to town. It's a story that we've told time and time again over the years and on this show. We do it every Confederate History Month, and every time we do a look back as we celebrate a new year, it's one of the great moments in political cesspool history. Well, the great general is under attack again this week. He's in the news, and anytime he's in the news, he's under attack. So I think, Keith, you and Bill might have brushed against this story last week. This one's actually originating out of Mississippi, our sister state to the south. What's going on with Nathan Bedford Forrest this week?
Well, of course, this is the 150th anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War, and Civil War enthusiasts, mainly white, throughout the nation, have plans which are not endorsed by the left or by the politically correct crowd. Now, in Mississippi, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, which is kind of a, you know, it's a group that celebrates the Confederate cause and the Civil War and their ancestors that were Confederate soldiers. What they have done is they have petitioned the state of Mississippi to issue a special vanity license plate with Nathan Bedford Forrest's picture on it. Of course, this is like all vanity license plates. You'd have to pay a premium to get it. Big deal. Well, it is a big deal with the left. They do not like the idea of white consciousness, and particularly people that have some type of loyalty to the old regime. You know, they thought they'd killed us, but the corpse is twitching. So they have gone into their full court press mode. And in the local television station, the Fox affiliate, and of course Fox is supposed to be the conservative alternative to all of the others. Well, this shows you how conservative they are. Their program staff ran a two-part series called Nathan Bedford Forrest, War Hero or War Criminal, and of course they came out on the side of his being a war criminal.
Yeah, and I'd like to mention, and this is something that of course never gets brought up when they're trying Nathan Bedford Forrest in the court of public opinion today, keep in mind that this man faced Congress after the war, and he was cleared of all of the, you know, phony charges of treason, this, that, and the other. I mean, Nathan Bedford Forrest was a man's man. He's a hero. He's a legend. He is someone that all Americans should aspire to be or look up to. People should model their lives after him when it comes to gallantry and valor. But nowadays, when you hear Forrest, it's always the negative. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to explore this a little bit further. Nathan Bedford Forrest under attack in Mississippi, of all places. And where's the governor stand on it? You might be surprised. We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we got to
place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back. Trying to catch up for having taken last week off. We're covering a lot of topics during tonight's first hour. We'll be covering a lot of topics throughout the program. If you've not yet joined us in the CFCC virtual fan party and online chat, we encourage you to do so right now and stick with us for the next 2 hours as the political cesspool continues to be broadcast to you, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network. Join us in the chat at cfcc.org. Got a good crowd there. Right now, before that last commercial break, we were talking about a story out of Mississippi, the Sons of Confederate Veterans. We're going to be talking about them a lot more during tonight's second hour. But the Sons of Confederate Veterans have proposed a vanity specialty license plate. You see them all the time for all sorts of different causes. I'm sure if the, you know, Gay and Lesbian Alliance of Mississippi had proposed it, that have just sailed through. But the fact that the SCV has proposed a commemorative license plate honoring Nathan Bedford Forrest, who actually was a true American hero. You know, that's being met with opposition from the usual suspects and from even some of our allies, supposed allies. We're going to let Keith pick it up from there.
You know, we assume that just about everybody knows the history of Nathan Bedford Forrest, but you know what they say about assume, it makes an ass of you and me. So let's go ahead and go into a little bit of the background. Nathan Bedford Forrest was born to a very poor family. He began showing his initiative early in life. He became a slave trader and a millionaire, and he operated out of Memphis, Tennessee. He came from Bedford County, Tennessee, thence his middle name, Nathan Bedford Forrest. He was a man's man in every way. He entered the Confederate Army as a private. He just enlisted as a private and was quickly promoted to colonel, where he set up a regiment that he financed with his own funds and was famous for escaping. He refused to surrender along with the rest of the Confederate forces at Fort Donelson, so he got loose, and thank goodness he did, because he was probably the most prominent Confederate general when all is said and done in the Western theater of the Civil War. Now, he was a man's man. He was not just a great general and a great strategist. He was also a great warrior. He had 30 horses shot out from under him while leading his troops in battle.
Let me just say this, Keith. Could you imagine, look at our leaders today, or quote-unquote leaders, could you imagine Obama, you know, suffering 30 lost horses? Do you think he'd lead us into battle like that, or Bush for that matter?
And furthermore, he killed 31 enemy combatants. He said at the end of the war he was one horse ahead in that regard. But he was a true soldier, a true warrior chieftain in every way. And quite frankly, even Robert E. Lee, when being interviewed by a British magazine after the war, he was asked, who was the best general in the war on either side? His answer was, a man, sir, I have never met, Nathan Bedford Forrest. That's why our ancestors here in Memphis erected in 1909 a statue of him on horseback and had himself and his wife buried there at the foot of the statue. We've had a video before on the political cesspool that you can access if you want to, that shows you the statue and has Eddie Miller and James talking about Nathan Bedford Forrest. Well, he was an exemplary general. He unfortunately didn't get the plum assignments that some other generals did, and quite frankly, had he gotten those assignments, the war, at least in the West, might have turned out entirely differently. But according to this Fox News outlet here in Memphis, they had a black guy named Ernie Freeman who wrapped it all up and said, you know, we can choose what heroes we want to honor and which ones we don't. He said, and I don't want to honor Nathan Bedford Forrest. He was too brutal, too bloodthirsty, and too bigoted for my taste.
But if you don't, European American conservative, if you went on television and said, you know, maybe Martin Luther King didn't represent all of our ideals and values, what would be the reaction, Keith?
Well, that's just the point I was going to make. I was glad that Ernie said that we can pick and choose our heroes, because I choose not to honor Martin Luther King Jr. on the same basis as Ernie Freeman. You know, what was it that Sam Goldwyn, the famous Jewish movie mogul for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, said his famous saying was, include me out. Well, on Martin Luther King, you can include me out. I want, if I'm going to honor somebody with a national holiday, I want someone who is honest, who is moral and upright, and is not a communist sympathizer. And, of course, Martin Luther King was all of those things. His history has been totally whitewashed. On the other hand, the governor of Mississippi, Haley Barbour, who's thrown his hat in the ring for the presidential sweepstakes for the Republican Party in the upcoming election, he said he didn't see anything wrong with the Nathan Bedford Forrest license plate, and the people need to get over it. Of course, the leftist forces of political correctness have been hammering on him, and now, predictably, but quite frankly, understandably, he's kind of backed off from his position. Unfortunately, conservatives have to do that in today's world. You know, all of us admire Pat Buchanan, but you're not going to hear Pat Buchanan going into great lengths and details and naming names about Jewish power and influence, for example. You've got to play your cards close to the vest, and that's unfortunately what is being forced on Haley Barbour. Not that I think that Haley Barbour is the best candidate for the Republican nomination, but this shows you the control that the left has over the media and over the culture in America. And what they do, if you come up with well-reasoned arguments, as Kevin McDonald said in that excellent interview with Alex Kurtagic that you have posted on our blog, what the left does, if you make well-reasoned, literate, incisive arguments to counter their arguments, they just ignore you. They treat you like you don't exist. He says, it's like Kafka. In Kafka, you turn from a human into a monster. Well, if you believe in paleoconservatism in America today, you are turned into a monster, and that's what they've tried to do to Nathan Bedford Forrest. Of course, Nathan Bedford Forrest was twice the man that the people that are trying to defame him now are. And furthermore, there was, you know, like you said, a court martial presided over by none other than William Tecumseh Sherman, the guy, infamous March to the Sea Union general, who was his primary foe during the Civil War. And this was about the Fort Pillow thing, the Fort Pillow instance where supposedly all these black soldiers got massacred. Well, he went through the whole thing exhaustively. He presided over the trial as a judge, and he said that Forrest had done nothing wrong, and he absolved him of any guilt. But, of course, the left just won't take no for an answer. They keep their own mythology going. So, of course, Nathan Bedford Forrest is this bloodthirsty, savage, racist monster. You know, and this is that this is what you have to contend with. If you, you know, they are, there was another great article in Occidental Observer lately by Christian Miller about how to raise white children. Well, his comment was you need to present them with heroes, white heroes that have the proper values and whatnot. Nathan Bedford Forrest, you could hardly do better than him. He was a brave man. He was a skilled warrior. He came from dirt, and he basically did everything he could to win the war. You know, after the war, William Quantrill, you know, the famous Confederate partisan in Missouri who was supposed to, you know, they made the, you know, he has been portrayed throughout history as being a bloodthirsty guerrilla fighter. He was asked about the war and about what he did, and he said, if the entire Confederacy had fought the way I did, we wouldn't have lost the war. Quite frankly, the same thing could be said for Nathan Bedford Forrest. If the entire Confederate generalship had fought the war the way that Nathan Bedford Forrest did, and of course he's not subject to any of the charges that are made against Quantrill, but he was quite a formidable adversary, I don't think we would have lost the war. And basically, what were we looking for? What were our ancestors looking for? They were just looking to divorce themselves from what they considered to be a corrupt and oppressive government, which is the same thing that the original 13 colonies did in the American Revolution.
Well, that's exactly right, Keith. Absolutely beautiful remarks there. You really laid out the case well, as you always do. And the reason it's being brought up again tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is, of course, getting back to the common denominator here, the square root, I guess. And Nathan Bedford Forrest, the license plate that's been proposed in Mississippi, meeting opposition. Haley Barbour wants for it, now quasi against it. And, you know, I don't go for that. I think Barbour, you look at Barbour, he's obviously a good old boy. He's obviously a guy that has his head on straight. But even he is susceptible to being forced to cow to political correctness. And I can understand it on some levels, but you don't trade in your ancestors. You don't trade in your heroes under any circumstances, and unfortunately, that is apparently what he's done here on Forrest. And you look at the heroes, Sam Dixon also said it here on this radio program in one of his interviews a few years ago. It is important to have heroes. You look at our heroes, Forrest, Lee, Davy Crockett. Compare them to the cultural Marxist heroes. Got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We're out of time. We'll be back with the second hour right after this. Keith Alexander on fire tonight.
Town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that took out everybody. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon, and Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 80s.